Reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 8, Text 32. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Kechittahurajam jatam punya shlokasya kirtaye. Yado priyasya yan vavaye malayasye vachandanam. Some say that the unborn is born for the glorification of pious kings, and others say that he is born to please King Yadu, one of your dearest devotees. You appear in his family as sandalwood appears in the Malaya hills. Purport. Because the Lord's appearance in this material world is bewildering, there are different opinions about the birth of the unborn. In the Bhagavad Gita, the Lord says that he takes birth in the material world, although he is the Lord of all creations and is unborn. So there cannot be any denial of the birth of the unborn because he himself establishes the truth. But still, there are different opinions as to why he takes his birth. That is also declared in the Bhagavad Gita. He appears by his own internal potency to reestablish the principles of religion and to protect the pious and annihilate the impious. That is the mission of the appearance of the unborn. Still, it is said that the Lord is there to glorify the pious king Yudhishthir. Lord Sri Krishna certainly wanted to establish the kingdom of the Pandavas for the good of all in the world. When there is a pious king ruling over the world, the people are happy. When the ruler is impious, the people are unhappy. In the age of Kali, in most cases, the rulers are impious, and therefore the citizens are always continuously unhappy. But in the case of democracy, the impious citizens themselves elect their representative to rule over them, and therefore they cannot blame anyone for their unhappiness. Maharaj Nala was also celebrated as a great pious king, but he had no connection with Lord Krishna. Therefore, Maharaj Yudhisthira is meant here to be glorified by Lord Krishna. The Lord has already glorified King Yadu, having taken birth in his family. Although he is known as Yadava, Yaduvir, Yadunandan, etc., he is always independent of such obligations. He is just like the sandalwood that grows in the Malaya hills. Trees can grow anywhere and everywhere, yet because the sandalwood trees grow mostly in the area of the Malaya hills, the name sandalwood and the Malaya hills are interrelated. Therefore, the conclusion is that the Lord is ever unborn like the sun, and yet he appears as the sun rises on the eastern horizon. As the sun is never the sun of the eastern horizon, so the Lord is no one's son, but he is the father of everything that be.
Om Gyanatimarandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshurinmalitam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Pancha Kalpa Tarubhyascha Kripa Sindhu Vayevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Nama Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Shivasadi Gaur Bhaktavinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare.
So this is a continuation of Queen Kunti's prayers. We saw in the previous verses how Kunti, although she was the nephew of Krishna, recognized and glorified Krishna's divinity. We spoke before the importance of understanding Krishna in order to worship him, just like the Mayavadis. They have a misconception about Krishna. They think that the form of Krishna is a product of illusion. And because their knowledge is incorrect, therefore they offend Krishna. What to speak of worship Krishna? Bhagavad Gita says, Maya aprita jnana, their knowledge is stolen by illusion. And therefore their duskritana, mam duskritana mudha. Duskritana means one who does bad. What to speak of doing good? They're not even neutral, they do bad because they lack knowledge. Also, Queen Kunti is praying to Krishna and recognizing his divinity and position because that is part of Queen Kunti's love for Krishna. Queen Kunti is in the mood of servitude, although she has some parental mood towards Krishna being Krishna's aunt. It's not a pure parental mood because she realizes Krishna's position. But realizing Krishna's position is also part of her love for Krishna. Because the love of a servant is seeing my master is my maintainer, my master is my protector. So when a servant hears about the powerful and wonderful position of his master, that invokes the servant's love for Krishna. So we've seen so many wonderful prayers by Queen Kunti, which also express how to know Krishna and actually how to understand Krishna's inconceivable potency by our dependence, and how to approach Krishna by our dependence on him, which invokes his attention and care, which invokes our devotion and affection for him. So practically everything is contained in these wonderful prayers. And these past few verses, Kunti was clearing up also doubts and misconceptions have to be cleared also for one to take to bhakti or devotional service. Prabhupada described that doubts are like demons. So if you have the wrong misunderstanding or conceptions, then doubts will arise in our heart. And that those doubts will weaken our determination and faith, or weaken our faith and determination to engage in devotional service. So she was also clearing up some doubts that people have about Krishna due to his inconceivable potency. You may think that Krishna is partial because he appears to favor his devotees. But she explains that no, Krishna is equal to all. But if one is dependent on him and approaches him purely, that will attract Krishna's mercy. That doesn't make him impartial because his mercy is for everyone. But we have to be the proper receptacle. And the proper receptacle for Krishna's mercy is our purity and sincerity of purpose, which naturally invokes, which invokes Krishna's natural response. So though he's favoring his devotees in one sense, he's impartial because anyone can become his devotee. And in fact, in one sense, everyone is his devotee. But some know it and some don't know it. Or some are accepting it and some are rebelling against it. So it's not that Krishna is partial and under the laws of material nature. It's not by karma he has hate and like. Indriyas indriyas yarte, raga dvesha bhavastuka. Within the senses, there's hate and like for different objects due to our previous karma. We like this and we hate this. Not that Krishna is liking and hating because that's in his senses due to his previous deeds and activities. But he's responding favorably to a devotee naturally due to the devotee's sincere desire to become his devotee. And what is Krishna's reciprocation to his devotee anyway? His reciprocation to his devotee anyway is giving them transcendental knowledge so that they can serve him. And then she was explaining, and I think this verse today is related to that too, that Krishna has inconceivable potency, and therefore it may confuse or bewilder us when we try to hear about his activities and try to understand him. If you don't accept that logical fact about the position of the Supreme Lord, that he has inconceivable potency, you're bound to misunderstand him. You don't see his inconceivable potency, you can think that he's impersonal. Because God must be everywhere. If he's everywhere, then he can't be in one place. If he's everywhere, then he cannot be personal. But Krishna's inconceivable potency is that although so much energy is emanating from him, he remains the complete balance. That's the first verse of the Ishopanishads, which is the Upanishads to understand Krishna, the personality of Godhead. The first point is to understand his inconceivable potency. Otherwise, we will certainly misunderstand. When we see that he takes birth as a fish, without understanding his inconceivable potency, it's so bewildering. What will we conclude? We will conclude that this is fiction, or this is not God. There's so many bewildering aspects to Krishna's position. He works and then he's inactive. He takes birth, but then he's unborn at the same time. So if you think that Krishna takes birth, then you'll think that he's an ordinary person. If you think that he doesn't take birth, then you'll conclude that Krishna, who came from the womb of Devaki, is not God. So these were discussed, and there's a very wonderful verse, text 31, which I believe at the end of the previous class we didn't have sufficient time to go over. I'm going to read it again, and then we'll proceed. My dear Krishna, Yasoda took up a rope to bind you when you committed an offense, and your perturbed eyes overflooded with tears, which washed the mascara from your eyes, and you were afraid, though fear personified is afraid of you. This sight is bewildering me. In the previous verse, it mentioned that Krishna descends as animals, men, aquatics, bewildering, but this is even more bewildering. And you have to actually understand this position, that it's actually within reason that Krishna becomes subservient to his devotee. Otherwise, when you read the 10th canto and you read Krishna's pastimes, you'll conclude that he's an ordinary person. You won't be able to understand how he's God unless you actually understand these points and understand reasonably why Krishna can be, who's the Supreme Lord, can be afraid of his mother without compromising his divinity. Jiva Goswami said that this is the most sublime truth, that although Krishna is the Supreme Lord, he is conquered by his devotee. Prabhupada explains, here is a specific example of the Lord's being the Supreme and at the same time a plaything in the presence of his pure devotee. That God, who's the supreme controller, is a plaything in the hands of his pure devotee. That God, who's the supreme controller, is the chariot driver of Arjuna. That God, who's the supreme controller, is surrendered to his dearmost servant, Srimati Radharani. There's one place that we will visit in Vrindavan called Mankutir. In Barsana. Barsana is a manifestation of Lord Brahma. Because
we are in the Brahma Madhva Gaudiya Sampradaya. So Lord Brahma also wanted to be in Krishna's pastimes. So he manifests as Barsana, or the hill in Barsana. And there's four hills, and one of them is Mankutir. And in Mankutir, it's a place that the Brijvasi, especially the devotees in Barsana, who are very much inclined towards Radharani, glorified. Because it was there that something, there's one very high extent, there's different stages of prema or love. One of the highest stages of prema is called man, transcendental anger. So sometimes Radharani becomes angry with Krishna because she feels that Krishna is associating with other young women of Braja, Vrindavan. She becomes angry and Krishna can't pacify her, no matter what he does. There's many stories. So Krishna on Mankutir, on this very high hill, the temple up there, Krishna had to come and he was begging Radharani forgiveness, and the tears from his eyes washed her lotus feet. Krishna was defeated, surrendered to Radharani, begging Radharani, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. It's a plaything in the hand of his Lord, his devotees. So Prabhupada explains this in the purport, and it's a very important point. The Supreme Lord also accepts the loving service of his devotees more relishably when the service is rendered spontaneously out of pure affection without anything of reverential admiration. Generally, the Lord is worshipped by the devotees in a reverential attitude, but the Lord is meticulously pleased when the devotee, out of pure affection and love, considers the Lord to be less important than himself. So, when there's a conception of Krishna's divinity, then the devotee feels that there's certain rules or there's certain etiquette and rules in terms of the relationship because you're dealing with a superior. So there's some duty or obligation in how you must behave in that relationship. And that duty or obligation, in a very transcendental sense, is something external to love. And therefore it weakens the love. And therefore the love of the servant can never be equal to the love of a friend, or the love of the mother, or the love of a lover, whose love is free from any constraints of etiquette and reverence. So it's called kevala bhakti, only bhakti. Even though in Vaikuntha, Krishna's there, manifest as God, still that love is not as pure in one sense. Although that's still pure love, it's still not as pure. Not kevala bhakti. Siguru charana padma, kevala bhakti sadhana. Guru has kevala bhakti in our life. Spontaneous devotion. The Lord's pastimes in the original abode of Goloka Vrindavan are exchanged in that spirit. The friends of Krishna consider him one of them. They do not consider him to be of reverential importance. The parents of the Lord, who are called pure devotees, consider him a child only. The Lord accepts the chastisement of the parents more cheerfully than the prayers of the Vedic hymns. Similarly, he accepts the reproaches of his fiancées more palatably than the Vedic hymns. When Lord Krishna was present in this world, material world, to manifest his internal pastimes of the transcendental realm, of Goloka Vrindavan as an attraction for the people in general, he displayed a unique picture of subordination before his foster mother, Yasoda. The Lord, in his naturally childish playful activities, used to spoil the stock butter of Mother Yasoda by breaking the pots and distributing the contents to his friends and playmates. including the celebrated monkeys of Vrindavan who took advantage of Lord Krishna's munificence. So Krishna was so naughty, he would pile some boxes where they were hanging milk, which was being turned to yogurt. Then the yogurt is turned into ghee. So a lot of the milk is hanging in pots. So Krishna would climb on some boxes and break the pots. He would go into the other gopis' houses. This means the elderly gopis. And then the monkeys would come around and he'd feed all the yogurt to the monkeys. So you can imagine how upset the elderly gopis were. And they would come in and then Krishna would be so, I don't know what the Sanskrit translation of wise guy is. He's such a wise guy that he would say, what are you talking about? Because the monkeys had so much ghee and so much butter, so much yogurt, that they couldn't eat anymore. So Krishna said, what are you blaming me for? Just look, this ghee is so rancid that they don't even can't even eat it anymore. I was just trying to just eat it because it was so bad. And they become so angry and they would report to the mother. Mother Yasoda saw this, and out of a pure love, she wanted to make a show of punishment for a transcendental child. She took a rope and threatened the Lord that she would tie him up, as is generally done in the ordinary household. Seeing the rope in the hands of Mother Yasoda, the Lord bowed down his head and began to weep, just like a child, and tears rolled down his cheeks, washing off the black ointment smeared about his beautiful eyes. This picture of the Lord is adored by Kunti Devi because she is conscious of the Lord's supreme position. He is feared often by fear personified, yet he is afraid of his mother, who wanted to punish him just in an ordinary manner. Kunti was conscious of the exalted position of Krishna, whereas Yasoda was not. Therefore, Yasoda's position was more exalted than Kunti's. So, because she was free from this conception of Krishna's divinity, her love was more spontaneous. So Kunti's appreciating. Mother Yasoda got the Lord as her child, and the Lord made her forget altogether that her child was the Lord himself. So for the mother to relish this motherly love, the essence of which is called anugraha, or mercy. And mercy only flows to one who is incapable or in need. So a mother's love can only relish a motherly love when she sees that the child is in need. So Mother Yasoda or Nanda Maharaj will never want to see Krishna as God, because then their anugraha or mercy cannot flow to him because he's not in need of their mercy. So therefore their madhurya or their sweetness of their love, it covers the fact that Krishna is God, although they have some idea sometimes. At the same time, Krishna's love for his mother and father is that I am in need of you. You are my protector, you are my maintainer. So Krishna also becomes forgetful. Krishna is both sarvajna, all-knowing, and mugdatta, or forgetful at the same time. If Mother Yasoda had been conscious of the exalted position of the Lord, she certainly would have hesitated to punish the Lord. But she was made to forget this situation because the Lord wanted to make a complete gesture of childishness before the affectionate Yasoda. This exchange of love between the mother and the son was performed in a natural way. And Kunti, remembering this scene, was bewildered. And she can do nothing but praise the transcendental filial love. Indirectly, Mother Yasoda is praised for her unique position of love, or she could control even the all-powerful Lord as her beloved child. So these are Kunti's prayers. She's glorifying all the different aspects of Krishna, his position, and also when he covers his position. He's God, and he's a plaything in the hands of his devotees.
So now we'll go to today's verse, which continues to explain the position of God. Why does God even come to this world? If he's unborn, if he's Krishna's unborn, ajopi son avyatma bhutanam ishvarapisam prakritim swam adishtana sambhavat yatmamaya, if he's unborn, why does he even appear in the womb of Devaki? What is the reason? Generally, when you act, you have some motive, some purpose to fulfill. If you're not in need of something, you don't act. You don't go to the store and buy something if you have it. So why is Krishna acting when he is Atmaram, when he is self-sufficient, Aptakam, and all his desires are within him? So why does he act? So why the Lord invented himself is going to be explained from 32 to 34. And the opinions of different individuals are going to be given. So some say, Kechit, some say, why is the unborn born? Punya shlokasya kirtayai, for glorifying the pious kings, that he comes to. This is also, Prabhupada said, mentions it in Bhagavad Gita, yada yada hi dharma sya glanir bhavati bharata. He comes when there's discrepancy of religion, and he supports the pious kings, and he protects the devotees. And here it says, you appear in his family as sandalwood appears in the Malaya hills. So not only to establish the pious kings, but to glorify your devotee. You glorify your devotee. An example is given here of these hills that these Malaya hills that are famous. And they're famous because sandalwood trees grow mostly in the area. And therefore the name of sandalwood and Malaya trees are interrelated. Yeah, they're interrelated. So in a similar way that the sandalwood glorifies the Malaya hills, Krishna appears in the Yadu dynasty because he wants to glorify his devotee. And as a result of Krishna being born in the Yadu dynasty, the Supreme Lord is known as Yadava, Yadu Nandana, Yadu Veer. He's glorified. So Krishna always wants to glorify his devotees because he reciprocates their love, because he's the Supreme Person. In the next chapter, we'll see how Krishna so much wants to glorify his devotee, Grandfather Bhishma Dev, that he arranges that he himself it becomes inspired with the incapability of satisfying Yudhisthira's inquiries. Yudhisthira is depressed and comes to him. Krishna cannot satisfy him. Why? Because Krishna wants him to go to Bhishma Dev so that he can glorify the exalted position of his devotees. Apare vasudevasya devakyam yachito bhyagat ajastvam asya shemaya vadaya cha suradvisham. Others say that since both Vasudev and Devaki prayed for you, you have taken your birth as their sons. Undoubtedly you are unborn. Yet you take birth for their welfare and to kill those who are envious of the demigod. So this is also similar. It says you take birth for their welfare and to kill those who are envious of the demigods. This is very similar also to the verse, Paritta Nayo Sadhunam, Vanashayatra Diskritam. To protect the sadhus, Vanashayatra Diskritam, to protect the, and to annihilate the miscreants. But here, the Krishna can do that by, indirectly, by the arrangement of his material energy. But the more prominent reason that Krishna appears is to reciprocate the love of his devotees. Because in their previous life, Vasudeva and Devaki were Sutapa and Krishna, and they went into austerity. Out of their parental affection for Krishna, they performed a severe type of penance to get Krishna as their son. So Krishna is reciprocating the love of his devotees.
Paravatara nayayanye bhuvo nava ivo dadao Siddhantya buribarena jato yatma puvartita.
Others say that the Lord, being overburdened like a boat at sea, is much aggrieved, and that Brahma, who is your son, prayed for you, and so you have appeared to diminish the trouble. So, this is another reason for Krishna appearing. He appeared, Prabhupada just directly says in the purport. Some people say that the Lord appeared because of the prayers of Brahmaji. So that's in the Krishna book, it starts out with the 10th canto. Once the world was overburdened by the unnecessary defense force of demoniac kings. And because of that, the Lord appeared, the Lord Brahma, Bhumi, the Mother Earth, feeling aggrieved, went to Lord Brahma, and the demigods went to the milk ocean. I think that's also described within the halo of the universe. There is a transcendental planet known as Swetadvip, which is the abode of Shiradakashai Vishnu, the Paramatma feature, the Supreme Lord. Whenever there is trouble in the universe that cannot be solved by the administrative demigods, they approach Brahmaji for a solution, and if it is not to be solved even by Brahmaji, then Brahmaji consults and prays to Shiradakashai Vishnu for an incarnation and solution to the problems. Such a problem arose when Kamsa and other kings were ruling over the earth, and the earth became too much overburdened by the misdeeds of the Asuras. Brahmaji, along with other demigods, prayed at the shore of the Shiradak ocean, and they were advised of the descent of Krishna as the son of Vasudeva and Devaki. So this is the reason. In one of the commentaries, the two commentaries that had access to are Jiva Goswami's and Sridhar Swami's. And one book published in 1898, where in very, very difficult English, part of the commentaries were translated, but in such a way that unless you knew the Bhagavatam thoroughly, the commentaries wouldn't have any much value to you. Because of the English and how he did it. He just gave some comment in each word, but one of the commentaries it says, although Brahma knew the Lord was all-pervading, why did he journey to the ocean of milk to offer his prayers? And the answer is sometimes people also say, what is the need for going to the temple? Even God, but the answer is, even if God is everywhere, you have to go in the prescribed way. So he went, and you have to approach God in the prescribed way. So he went to the milk ocean.
Bhavesmin klishyamananam avidya kama karma bi shravana smaranahani karishya niti chai.
And yet others say that you appear to rejuvenate the devotional service of hearing, remembering, worship. And so in order that the conditioned souls suffering from material pangs might... And yet others say that you appear to rejuvenate the devotional service of hearing, remembering, worship, and so on, in order that the conditioned souls suffering from material pangs might take advantage and gain liberation. So, this is actually this particular reason, and yet others say, this reason is also, it's very, very consistent with why Vyasadeva wrote the Srimad Bhagavatam, or why Narada Muni told Vyasadeva to write the Srimad Bhagavatam, so that people would have access to Krishna's pastimes. And by hearing them, they would purify the desire that caused their entanglement in the material world. The desire that caused their entanglement in the material world is the desire not to be a devotee. So when you hear Krishna's pastimes, you desire to become a devotee and therefore rectify the root desire that keeps us, caused us to be in the material world and keeps us in the material world. So, others have this opinion that he appeared specifically for that, not just to establish religious principles or protect it, but to exhibit his pastime so that we'll have sufficient subject matter to chant and hear about. So this conditioned soul suffering from material pangs can take advantage of this and gain liberation. So, Prabhupada said in the purport, a living being cannot help but render service because he is constitutionally made for that purpose. The only function of the living being is to render service to the Lord. That's our purpose. We discussed this so many times. That's our dharma. That's our eternal nature. The Lord is great. The living beings are subordinate to him. Therefore, the duty of the living being is just to serve him only. Unfortunately, the illusion living beings, out of misunderstanding only, become servants of the senses by material desire. This desire is called avidya or nescience. So sense gratification is avidya or nescience. Because sense gratification, the desire for sense gratification, reveals an ignorance of the true, of tattva, or the truth, that we are God's servants. And out of such desire, the living being makes different plans for material enjoyment centered around a perverted sex life. He therefore becomes entangled in the chain of birth and death by transmigrating into different bodies on different planets under the direction of the Supreme Lord. So this is how one becomes entangled. The Lord, however, out of his causeless mercy, because he is more merciful to the suffering living beings than they can expect. So the Lord appears, Ajopi son, Abhyayatma, Bhutanam Ishvaram Prasam, Prakritim Swamadishtaya, Sambhavat Yatma Maya. He appears by his own Maya, but that's not the illusory energy, that's his mercy. Maya also means mercy. And why? He appears before them, before the living entities, and renovates the principles of devotional service, comprised of hearing, chanting, remembering, serving, worshiping, praying, cooperating, and surrendering unto him. Adoption of all the above-mentioned items, or any one of them, can help a conditioned soul get out of the tangle of nescience, and thus become liberated from all material sufferings created by the living being illusion by the external energy. This particular type of mercy is bestowed upon the living being by the Lord in the form of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So Krishna appears, and then Chaitanya Mahaprabhu appears, who is also Swayam Bhagavan, who is also non-different than Krishna. Why does he appear? To rejuvenate the devotional service of chanting and hearing. That's the reason for his appearance. Any questions so far, Jane?
Srinvanti gayanti granantya yabhikshnasha smaranti nandanti tavehitam jana Tareva Parshyant Yacharena Tapakam Bhava Pravaho Paramam Pradambujam.
O Krishna, those who continuously hear, chant, and repeat your transcendental activities, or take pleasure in others doing so, certainly see your lotus feet, which alone can stop the repetition of birth and death. So this is why Krishna appears. Because when you do this process, when he appears and you become attracted to him, and he himself preaches about surrendering to him and chanting and hearing his glories, and then when you do this, and when you also appreciate others who do this, then you see the lotus feet of the Lord. Because Krishna is not different than his bhava or devotion for him. It actually awakens our love of Godhead, and through that love of Godhead, we actually see Krishna. And when you see Krishna, then you're no longer in the material world. Ihayasya harayar dasye karmana manasa gira nikalas tu abhakta su jivan mukta su uchite. When one is serving Krishna, ihayasya harayar dasye karmana manasa gira, with words, work, mind, then you're liberated from this material world. So by this process, so Prabhupada describes in the purport how you cannot see Krishna simply by your eyes. You can only see Krishna by hearing properly about him. And the example was given of when Krishna was present, materialists like Ravana, Hiranyakashipu, Kamsa, Jarasandha, and Sishupal, they couldn't appreciate the presence of the Lord, even though the Lord was present before their eyes, because they didn't have devotion of them. If you have envy for someone, you cannot see him properly. You will see him as less than he is. So if you have envy of God, even if he appears before you, you will see him less than he is. You will not see him as God. And therefore, you know, the demons will even try to kill Krishna. So Prabhupada said, this necessary qualification of seeing Krishna is developed by the process of devotional service, but only beginning with hearing about the Lord from the right sources. The Bhagavad Gita is one of the popular literatures which are generally heard, chanted, repeated, etc. by the people in general. But in spite of such hearing, sometimes it is experienced that the performer of such devotional service does not see the Lord eye to eye. So despite hearing Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam, one is not seeing Krishna. What is the reason? The reason is that the first item, Shravana, is very important. If hearing is from the right sources, it acts very quickly. Generally, people hear from unauthorized sources. Like they hear the Bhagavatam from Bhagavatam reciters who are doing it for money, which means they're very much in material consciousness. And therefore, hearing from them doesn't have the proper effect. Such unauthorized persons may be very learned by academic qualifications, but because they do not follow the principles of devotional service, hearing for them becomes a sheer waste of time. Sometimes the texts are interpreted fashionably to suit their own purposes. Therefore, first one should select a competent and bona fide speaker and then hear from him. When the hearing process is perfect and complete, the other processes become automatically perfect in their own way. So Prabhupada discusses also how unscrupulous people, they speak only the 10th canto to people who are not qualified. Naturally, they speak the 10th canto because if you are interested in popularizing what you're speaking because you're motivated for popularity and economic remuneration for the Bhagavatam, which should never be done, then you'll present the pastimes that attract the people's senses, without qualifying them to hear in the proper way, by hearing from the very beginning, as Maharaj Prickett did from Sukadeva Goswami, and as we're proceeding from the very, very beginning. So Prabhupada gives that as a very common example, how hearing will not have the proper effect if heard in the improper way. And therefore they differentiate between the different pastimes of the Lord. But Prabhupada says that the Lord is absolute. There is no difference in the transcendental nature in each and every dealing of the Lord. One must hear about the Lord from the very beginning, as in the Srimad Bhagavatam or any other scriptures. And that will help the hearer attain perfection by progressive development. One should not therefore consider that his dealings, Krishna's dealings with the Pandavas, are less important than his dealings with the gopis. So we have to hear in the proper way. Any questions? Okay, text 37. Abhyajanastvam sakrite hita prabho jihasasi svit surado nujivana yesham nachanyad bhavata padam bujat parayanam rajasu yojita hasam. O my Lord, you have executed all duties yourself. Are you leaving us today, though we are completely dependent on your mercy and have no one else to protect us, now when all the kings are at enmity with us? So after all this glorification, now Kunti gets to her point. And therefore makes a humble request. Don't leave. Don't leave, because we are completely dependent on you. That's the essence of her prayer. And that's the essence of Krishna consciousness. She's explaining how Krishna can be known by those who are dependent on him, and not in the illusion that their material qualifications and assets can protect and progress them in life. And she presents Krishna's position to show that he is the person whom we should be dependent on. And then she clears up the misconceptions about Krishna's position. So we understand very, very clearly his position. And now she has just explained why he has taken birth. It's not due to karma. It's due to his own will, his own desire, to help those in the material world who are suffering. Janma karma chame divyam evam yo veti tatpata chakvadeham punajanma naiti. He's transcendental. So Prabhupada's purport, he emphasizes, well, I guess the same point that Kunti's emphasizing, it's the commentary. The Pandavas are most fortunate with all good luck. They were entirely dependent on the mercy of the Lord. This is the greatest fortune. Not wealth, not assets, not beautiful women, not followers, but the humility and clear understanding that I am dependent on Krishna. And therefore, with that dependence on Krishna means our attraction for him. To actually have devotion for Krishna, which means to have dependence on him. In the material world, to be dependent on the mercy of someone else is the utmost sign of misfortune. But in the case of our transcendental relation with the Lord, it is the most fortunate case, because we can live completely dependent. It's unfortunate to be dependent on someone in the material world, because they're not capable of giving shelter. And they're not reliable in reciprocating your service. Therefore, when you take shelter and depend on someone in the material world, it's a tremendous anxiety in the heart. You work for someone and he's your boss, and you depend on him, and he gives you the money, but if he no longer needs you, he'll fire you. It's so difficult to take shelter. But Krishna is is capable and dependable. And therefore we can take shelter of Krishna. The material disease is due to thinking of becoming independent of everything, but the cruel material nature does not allow us to become independent. The false attempt to become independent of the stringent laws of nature is known as material advancement of experimental knowledge. So, this is the material disease. We cannot become independent of Krishna because our nature is not independent. Only Krishna is Swarat, self-ruled, fully independent. Only Krishna is the Ashraya, the ultimate shelter. We are dependent. So if we don't take depend on Krishna directly and try to become independent of Krishna, then we wind up being controlled by the material nature. And we suffer. Therefore, no one can become independent of Krishna. Therefore, Prabhupada explains, but the highest goal of human civilization is to work hard under the guidance of the Lord and become completely dependent on Him. The highest achievement of perfect civilization is to work with valor, but at the same time depend completely on the Lord. So, If we're completely dependent on the Lord, does that mean that we shouldn't do anything? If Krishna is the controller, then why should we work? If we engage in some service for Krishna, but ultimately the results are up to Him, and we're not the controller, and we're not the cause, then why should we work? The Prabhupada said that's the wrong philosophy. We should be dependent on Krishna, but that we should work hard with valor. Let me see if I can explain this clearly. We should work hard because that is our duty. That is for our good. And we're servants of Krishna. So He wants us to become purified by being His servants. So we should become His servants. Even though He's the supreme controller, we can become His instruments. And we can carry out His mission. So we should work hard to execute the Lord's mission and service, although ultimately the results will be dependent on Him. They were completely dependent. This is the Pandavas were ideal executors of this standard of civilization. Undoubtedly, they were completely dependent on the goodwill of Lord Krishna, but they were not idle parasites of the Lord. They were all highly qualified, both by personal character and by physical activities. Still, they always looked for the mercy of the Lord because they knew that everything is dependent, every living being is dependent by constitutional position. So this is the perfection of life. Just like when Prabhupada came to America, he was completely dependent on Krishna. It's you... You hear those prayers that he made when he came to America. He was completely dependent on Krishna. You make things successful, but at the same time, he worked hard to be an instrument for Krishna's will out of devotion. So Prabhupada mentions something. He says, those who try to become falsely independent of the Lord are called anatta, or without any guard. Anatta means controller. Anatta, without a controller, without... You're an orphan. Whereas those who are completely dependent on the will of the Lord are called sanata, or those having someone to protect them. See, just like a mother and father, it's good. You have a mother and father who you can depend on, who are there, who will maintain you, help you. But that doesn't mean that you become lazy. Nor does it mean that you're unfortunate because you have a controller. But because they love you, you're very fortunate to have someone who's a superior in authority. And when you don't have it, you're very unfortunate. You're an orphan. No one glorifies an orphan because he has no one to control him. They feel sorry for him because he has no one to protect them. So So this is the Pandavas' mood. They were dependent. They were not orphans of the Supreme Lord. They had him as their guardian and protector. Therefore, we must try to be sanatha so we can always be protected from the unfavorable condition of material existence. And then Prabhupada talks that this is what a great person is. In Bhagavad Gita, it mentions that after many, many births, one with knowledge, he accepts Krishna's shelter. That's the goal of all knowledge, is you actually become dependent on Krishna. Bahunam janmanamante gyanavam mabhapadyate vasudeva savamiti samahatma sadulava. A mahatma sees that Krishna is everything. And therefore he surrenders to him. That's the result of having clear understanding and knowledge that you become Krishna's servant. You're no longer an orphan. You're not an orphan in this material world. You're not, you know, you have a protector, a guardian who will be there for you in your time of need. This is the sign of a Mahatma. All the members of the Panda families were Mahatma in household life. Maharaj Yudhisthira was the head of these Mahatmas and Queen Kunti was the mother. The lessons of Bhagavad Gita and all the Puranas, they're Mahatmas. And then finally, Prabhupada describes in the verse that this verse indicates her separation. She's there with Krishna, but that she's feeling separation because she knows he's going to leave. That's separation and union, and that's even the heaviest separation. The heaviest separation is when you know you're not going to see someone who you love and you're with them and you're going. And that separation is so devastating that we can't even understand it. When Krishna left Vrindavan, how the residents of Vrindavan felt is indescribable. It's described when Uddhava came back on Krishna's word to deliver a message to the residents of Vrindavan and the gopis. When he saw Mother Yasoda, she was just in a catatonic state. After so many years, she still hadn't washed the pots, wasn't cleaning the house, was just weeping and crying. So this is her mood. For them, for the devotees, separation from the Lord was just like the separation of a fish from water. This is the life of a devotee. Krishna is the life. Srimati Kunti Devi therefore felt such separation like a thunderbolt, and the whole prayer of the queen is to try to persuade the Lord to stay with them. After the battlefield of Kurukshetra, although the inimical kings were killed, their sons and grandsons were still there to deal with the Pandavas. It is not only the Pandavas who are put into such condition of enmity, but all of us are always in such a condition. In other words, the Pandavas had some enemies. But Krishna could leave now because her sons and grandsons were to deal with them. But it's not only the Pandavas. All of us are in that condition of enmity in the material world. And the best way of a living being is to become completely dependent on the will of the Lord and thereby overcome all difficulties of material existence. Are there any questions? Srila Prabhupada ki jai.